Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports. You know, it's interesting. I've gotten into lots of Twitter fights during my Twitter career. But one of my favorite ones is over this assumption that somehow race played a factor in Mitchell Trubisky being drafted ahead of Deshaun Watson, which is a sad state of affairs and kind of comical. What I find to be super interesting is that I had a perspective on Pat Mahomes, and I think end of the day, it's come around to be completely and utterly accurate. I'll share that with you in a second. First, let me share with you a really, really bad IG where Michael Lee Litherland. Your message in your take the COVID vaccine and getting the vaccine still sucks. And the same people who did not buy it before, still not buying it. There are other better options than the vaccine for COVID. Your left, by the way, it's yours, apostrophe Y-R-E. I shouldn't be, my grammar's not good, but it's better than this. Your left thinking narrative won't let your eyes open to see the other side. We all know better. Who is we? Look, this is the problem with social media. And it's the problem for anybody. Okay? It's the problem for anybody. I'm not going to do the COVID debate thing. It's not a debate. Okay? If you're a right winger, the crazy part about it is there's a portion of people who voted for the former president, including his son, who were like, yeah, don't make me take the vaccine. Like, you idiots, had you simply embraced that your guy helped fast track this vaccine, you might still have the office. You were lied to, okay? For a year, you were lied to. It's pretty obvious. It's going to go away. It's going to go away. Not the big deal. Seasonal flu. Now, that became a huge problem. Huge problem. Just lied to along the way. So if you start with the, hey, most people like, no. If you actually notice, it was like 3 months ago, even Fox News and the former president started going like, you know, everybody should get the vaccine. Because all the numbers told you, like, far less likely to be hospitalized. Basically, almost everybody in the hospital is in the hospital because they didn't get the vaccine. That's it. It's just a level of protection. It is not like so many of the vaccines and inoculations of the past, because this is not like anything of the past. Because it's all new, and this is the best we can do. But you're like, all of us. You mean the 20% of people who haven't figured out that the best way to get on with our lives is just get the vaccine? That's who? Yeah, no, I'm not actually listening to you. I grow super, all of us, like, well, it's left-leaning. Like, no, it's not. I don't give a crap about if you're a Democrat or Republican. I'm not doing political radio. Like, this last weekend was an unbelievable exercise in how sports are great. And Kyrie Irving and all these guys, they represent all of us. And their actions are ones in which they should be going like, hey, just like, remember when the president gets elected, the vaccinations come out, he's like, hit me in the shoulder. Why? Because if he'll get it, it's good enough for him, good enough for everybody. He's a senior citizen. I said the same of LeBron James. Like, well, I don't like vaccine mandates. Dude, you've had mandatory vaccinations since you were born, you dummy. This is part of life. Unless you spent your entire professional life studying diseases and vaccines, if you're that guy, I'll listen to you. Otherwise, shut up. Stop it. It's all ridiculous. Don't say, oh, Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's an idiot, dude. He's the type of guy who's been told he's smart and he says stupid things in a way in which he uses really nice word salad. And you're like, you know what? Like, dude, Kyrie Irving, when they were playing in the bubble a year and a half ago, whatever, they decided to play in the bubble. Kyrie Irving was like, yeah, it's us versus them. He made it into some racial thing. Like, what are you even talking about? Dude's a complete space cadet. He's talking about people losing their jobs. No, they're not. They're volunteering to not have their jobs. That's what they're doing. It's really simple. The same thing, by the way, has happened in colleges and universities for years. If you don't want to go to college or university, you don't have to. But if you want to, you got to get your shots. Anyone who's been to a four-year institution knew before you showed up on campus, you had to show an updated vaccination record, didn't you? This is not new. Vaccine mandates are not new. The only thing that's new is we have an idiot box, okay, which has people that have no, that should not resonate that do. Plus you have your phone, your Facebook, your Twitter, and everyone's opinion seems the same, and it's not. And I'm not telling you because I know. I don't know. But I know there are people in labs that have studied for hundreds of years and tried to get things right just in case. And the mRNA thing has been around for a long time. And this is the first time they can use it. And that's what they're doing. And it's not perfect. It's not. But it works. And that's why everybody wants it. So, like, what are we doing? And instead of thinking of the however many people have lost their job because they wouldn't get the vaccine, Kyrie Irving will pull his head out of his backside. He realized that when you play in the NBA and people can attend NBA games, all of those, not just the people who are on his team get to play, but all the people who work in the arenas, right? All the surrounding restaurants and surrounding grocery stores and everything else can remain open. It's called the greater good. And I will not be told you're a this or that in terms of a political thing. It's not political, dude. I don't care who you voted for. Don't care. Don't care. Okay? But you're listening to a group of people who lied about this exact same disease for a year. The same, and honestly, those same group of people lied about the election for like 6-9 months. Whatever. Still don't, like, that. Those are the people you're associating with. People who told things that are definably false, that everyone knows not only are false, but have been proven false time and again. And I'm not the dumb one here. Chris White, I turned in to hear some sports and hear your idiot opinions. Won't be turning this station anymore. Bye, Chris. This is the problem with people in positions of power who tell things that aren't true. And I understand that Kyrie just wants to be anti whatever everybody else is. And I, as a person with a contrarian's heart, I get it. This is not the time. Not the time. You can't be a contrarian about everything just to be a contrarian about everything. Maybe you can. Let's get to sports here. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted 99% of the places in the U.S. to take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. Pretty crazy that Pat Mahomes is throwing so many interceptions. But I heard Sage Rosenfeld say something last hour, which just really made me think. He's trying to score 14 points on every possession. And here's what happens. Chris Carter, I worked with him at ESPN. I worked with him at Fox. And I think, Jay Stu, did you work when you were over at Fox on the TV side? Was Chris still there? I'm trying to think. He was in New York and you were in LA, right?
Correct.
He had an expression, and it's a really good one. And he used it for athletes. And he said, money doesn't change you. It makes you more of who you are, right? And I think that's what's happened with Pat Mahomes. Look, Mahomes is a great talent and a tremendous quarterback. But the things that we have celebrated him for are actually some unsound plays. It reminds me a little bit of Steph Curry and his first trip to the NBA Finals. You remember what happened with Steph Curry when they played the Cavs? Remember what happened late? I think it was maybe it was game six when they, I think it was game six, right? Where he threw the ball kind of behind his back. Maybe it was when they lost. Actually, it was probably when they lost to the Cavs. He had a bunch of turnovers. And, you know, one time it was a behind the back pass to Klay Thompson when all he needed was a regular pass. And what had happened was because Steve Kerr let them play so free, but also because we championed how they played free and all of the passes. Like, look, there's a reason that coaches tell you not to, you don't have to throw behind the back pass. Like a simple chest pass works. There's a reason that even some of the shots he makes aren't deemed great shots. It's not because they can't go in, but the percentage of times they go in. Like Pat Mahomes became this X-Man type of character because he threw no-look passes. Because he could find Tyreek Hill and just throw it up to him. And we saw it earlier this year. Which game was it where he threw the ball up to Tyreek Hill and Tyreek Hill just made a play on it? It was behind him. He came back, caught the ball, ran into the end zone, and they had this great comeback win. Whereas the singles and doubles are what wins more consistently. The easy pass, like Tom Brady hasn't been spectacular in years. He's not as good as Pat Mahomes. He's not as talented as Pat Mahomes. But what Tom Brady has mastered is simplicity and execution. I mean, look, what makes Aaron Rodgers great? Aaron Rodgers can try and do all the circus stuff possible, but look at his numbers. For the most part, never turns the football over. And that doesn't mean he doesn't take chances, but there's just a balance between it. When Pat Mahomes came out, one of the reasons that the Bears passed, mistakenly so, quite obviously, they thought they were going to have to play him right away, and they thought, man, he's got some footwork he got to clean up, some decision-making he got to clean up, that he just takes too many chances. And what happens is that because we celebrate the no-look passes, the deep throws to Tyreek Hill, that Tyreek Hill just makes a play. Even the one in the Super Bowl, like, it wasn't a great, he massively underthrew him. But Tyreek Hill just has great ball skills and awareness and stops and comes back and gets the ball and makes a play. And I understand that some of that is by design. Hey, if a guy's matched up man-to-man, throw it short. The cornerback actually interferes half the time. Understood. But this is who he's reverting back to who he has always been. A risk taker, a gunslinger, a gambler, a guy whose fundamentals sometimes can break down. And it's because we've championed all the risk taking and the success and not said anything about the flaws in it. This is the flaws in it. It doesn't mean that Pat Mahomes stinks. No, he's great. He might be the most talented guy we've ever seen. But this is something that he has to work through. Because the brain is actually, he's actually doing the opposite of what they need. With a bad defense, he actually needs these long, sustained drives. Keep his defense off the field. Everybody's playing too deep, making him take the short underneath stuff. And every once in a while, he gets frustrated or they get frustrated and they take a chance at something. That's what's happened. What's the difference in him and Tom Brady? Tom Brady is dink and dunk, get rid of it super quickly, live to play another day. And though Tom Brady's defensive front is good, defensive backfield sucks. It's terrible. But he keeps them off the field, okay, with these long, sustained drives. Just accurate. Just get rid of it. Just be simple. Singles and doubles. That's what I think Pat Mahomes is working through. Truly believe that. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. You know, it's been said you can't win by commenting on somebody else's problems. I think one coach has proven that to be false. Tell you who that is upcoming next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. It's really difficult, I think, sometimes to... You know, it's like every coach and all these players, they have to go up there and say something. They're asked about the John Gruden emails. Like, you know, what are you supposed to say? How are you supposed to handle it? It's not easy. But I did think that Brandon Staley, and it probably feels to many of you, listening, you're like, well, you're a Charger guy. So I look, people are talking about the Chargers. They are talking about what Brandon Staley said. Obviously, people are still reeling from the John Gruden news, and it's interesting. Here's Brandon Staley. I thought it's pretty, when you're the coach of a football team, you're the coach of grown men. Now, you'll have some that say, hey, you guys are too sensitive, and your phone's too much, you know, all of these things you do. You spend too much time worrying about what other people think instead of, and like, it's a this generation. All of that can be true, okay? But it's Brandon Staley's job. It's any of, there's 32 jobs in the NFL. Quarterback and coach are aligned on this level. Those guys have to play for you. That's it. They have to play for you. There's more to it, okay? There's a lot more to it in terms of putting together a dynamic staff, all of these other, understanding the X and O's. For quarterbacks, there's a skill set needed, but the basics of it, those guys have to play for you. And so what you say becomes like a game of telephone. They run to the other guys and your team, and like, did you hear what Coach said about John Gruden? Here's the Chargers coach.
I think that respect and trust in this world are really, really difficult to achieve. And I think about all the people that were affected by those emails, whether you're a person of color, whether you're a person, a gender, your sexual orientation, the people that were affected by those emails, that's who I'm thinking about, you know, because it's a sacred mantle for someone to call you coach or someone to call you a leader. And trust is really, really hard to achieve in this world. It's really, really challenging to achieve. And especially with people with those groups that I just mentioned. All right. And people are really guarded. All right. And they're skeptical of people because of emails like that. And I just think that, you know, kindness and lifting people up and respecting people you don't know. I just think that, you know, that's such a big part of our thing here is listening to people and learning about people, because I think what you'll discover is that we have so much more in common than not. And I think that, you know, for someone like me, it's just incumbent upon you to set the example every single day so that people that were, you know, talked about in those emails, that they don't need to feel that way. They shouldn't feel that way. And it's, you know, hopefully, you know, all of us can learn from this, that it's about bringing people together for me so that people can become, you know, the people that they dream about. And I think that for me, leading this football team and being someone, hopefully we can, you know, be a light for those people in those emails, that not everybody's like that, that there's far more people that will love you than the opposite. And hopefully this will be a chance for everybody to come together instead of go apart.
It's pretty strong stuff. Here's Derek Carr, quarterback of the Raiders, talking about the emails.
If we just started opening up everybody's private emails and texts, you know, people would start sweating a little bit. Hopefully not too many, you know. But maybe that's what they should do for all coaches and GMs and owners from now on, is open up. You got to open up everything, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, that's not happening, you know. It's just not. I mean, You are allowed to have personal thoughts and personal feelings, and I don't think you're allowed, or you should be running an organization if you truly have hate in your heart for any demographic of people. Right? That's just not how it's supposed to be. But I think the whole thing is fascinating. You know? I'm willing to admit I know people who've worked under John Gruden. I know people who were in the Raiders organization the first time he was there. I understand he has some enemies. First, he's not a victim. He did this to himself, but should be pointed out that there hasn't, at least to anyone's knowledge, like Marquette King likes to come out and go like, see, he cut me because I was, you know, he didn't like me or didn't like black people. It's like, hey, Marquette, there's 31 other teams. Nobody else picked you up, dude. So if John Gruden didn't like you, okay. Nobody else in the league liked you? Right? Jack Del Rio's worked like everywhere. That's who you were the kicker for before Gruden got there. Weren't you? He didn't apparently swear by you. So, like there's not been any accusations of him holding it against anybody. Like, I don't know what his feelings were when Carl Nassib came out, but all I can tell you is Nassib was still on the team and being championed by the city. And I think, I mean, in terms of the LGBTQ plus community and his comments, and like, look, I thought Gruden was probably done and it would be really hard to get men to follow him with the lips comment. It's just really hurtful. And I did on some level process it and go like, all right, well, here's a dude who's in a locker room and guys in locker rooms talk about all kinds of body parts. Okay. And yes, race is brought into it and it becomes okay. Then when you see the litany of it and somebody else with the email drop, it's one thing to be out to get him. It's another thing to have the goods to get him. They got him and he's gone. I also think it's reasonable to think people do evolve on this stuff. They just do, you know? I remember my dad passed like 7 years ago next month. And if you go back 15 years ago or something, I remember having a discussion with my dad about it, where he was born in 1940. He was in the 70s when he died. And, you know, he was still of the, well, you know, some people you're born that way, but some people it's a choice. And I was like, do you really think it's a choice? Like, do you think somebody chooses to go sit with their dad or their uncle or their mom and say, hey, I prefer this lifestyle? Like, it's still so taboo. And again, this is 15 years ago. It's less taboo now. I don't believe that's a choice. And it's very brave to do that, to come out and say who you are and what you feel and how you feel when you're an adult and people see you. Some people see you a different way. But I can also tell you that, you know, from his 60s to his 70s, like, my dad evolved. Like, you start to go like, hey, yeah, you know what? Oh, he's gay? I had no idea. Oh, yeah. You know why? Because it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't affect you. It's our own personal thoughts and feelings and desires. That's it. You know? So I think Staley got the dub. I think it's a really hard thing to do. And I think you can understand, in addition to his ability to process X and O's and put a great staff around him, I also think his command and leadership and, like, if you listen to that cut of Brandon Staley, did you want to play for him? The answer is probably yes. Probably yes. He's the head coach of the undefeated, number 3 ranked Cincinnati Bearcats. He's Luke Fickell. He's kind enough to spend some time with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Coach, I know this is a year where we're not close to the finish line, but there's a lot of potential, a lot of hope for this football team. As of today, where is your group in terms of where you think they should be this far into the season?
Well, obviously, our big deal has always been you got to play your best ball at the end of the year. So, as you know, it's the consistency that you have that can you grow throughout a season. And last week, I could actually say, was the first time we put four quarters together. And, early in the year, we played a half, and then we played a half, and then, you know, in game 3, we played 32 minutes, and then in game 4, we played 3 quarters. And so at least last week, we put, at least 4 quarters together. So I think our guys are on that trajectory of growing. There's a lot of things, obviously, that they're going to have to continue to handle, as they take care of their business. But all those things, I think, are going in the right direction because we have some really good leadership.
What is the process of handling it? And by handling it, I'm guessing that it's because the talk of a potential undefeated season, the talk of, you know, being from the non-Power 5 and making your way into the college football playoff. These are all the kind of the reasonable discussions college football people and fans have. How do you approach that at this point in the season with this group?
Well, it's always about handling. I mean, every team has to handle something, right? If you're not winning, then you got to be able to handle, whether it's criticism or ways of getting better. And when you have success, you got to be able to handle some of the attention and not allow it to change you. Either, as the great Coach Wooden said, either one, praise or criticism, can kill you if you swallow it. So we have to be able to, handle the attention, enjoy it because they've earned it, but also not lose sight on, hey guys, we've said this for 4.5 years now, that in order for us to be where we want to be, we have to play our best ball at the end of the year. And it's a process, and regardless of where we are in the process, we got to continue to grow. And I feel good at least about our older guys doing that. But I think sometimes the younger guys, it's even more difficult on them because they've known nothing but, you know, if they've been here for 2 or 3 years, they've known nothing but, you know, at least a little bit of the attention and a little bit of success. You know, these guys that have been here for 5 know what it was like when, you know, when we won 4 games and how difficult and tough it was.
What is that like? Because we've talked to several other coaches where it's almost like everybody has kind of a BYU year, right? Where you got you know, super seniors, guys that have been there 6 years. They're grown men. They've seen it all. They've done it all. I mean, many of these guys in a normal year would be a grad assistant, right? Kind of trying to figure out what's next for them. What is it like to coach this age of football player in college football?
We do have a few of those. We've probably got, you know, maybe 12 guys or so that have already graduated, and we've had some of that in the past, but we've got an enormous large group of guys that maybe, you know, have already finished up a lot of things, whether they're in their 5th or 6th year. And I just think it's the ability to sometimes idle time is the worst time. And for those guys, it's about keeping busy and how do you, you know, use that time, you know, to continue to get better. And sometimes that means, you know, reading or whatever. I mean, like, you're reading too much stuff. So I think there's a balance. I think that, you know, we could bring those guys in and do a lot more meeting time with them, but I don't know that that's always the best thing as well. So you got to kind of refer back to the things that you've done, and you got to continue to challenge those guys. And I think for us, we're in a place where those guys have accepted a lot of those challenges, whether it's, you know, to grow as a player or even to be a better leader and to help some of the young guys. So we're finding different ways to occupy maybe some of the time that the extra time that a lot of these guys might have.
Desmond's an amazing guy. Now he's a tremendous player, but, you know, his upbringing with a teenage mom in Louisville and growing up in Cincinnati to become kind of this star player. How's he handled, in your opinion, all of the fame and attention, especially after the Notre Dame game?
Well, I really do think he has done a great job of it. I'm sure it gets a little bit wearing. But I think he's had the chance to grow up, not just his upbringing and his background, obviously, but I think even his freshman, you know, redshirt freshman year where he's playing and having success, and then going into that second year where even in the league he was looked at as one of the top, you know, 2 or 3 quarterbacks. And, you know, he didn't play up to what, you know, he thought, or maybe what a lot of the people thought, even though we won. And then going into year 3, where he wasn't even listed as, I think, one of the top four quarterbacks in the league, you know, and he struggled early and then obviously played really well at the end. So I think the greatest thing in the world is he's had those failures in the last 4 years. Not huge failures, obviously, because he's won a lot of football games, but failures in the sense that maybe didn't live up to what he expected. So I think that's allowed him to be able to a little bit enjoy, you know, what he's doing now, but also to stay grounded as to what he has to continue to do, because he's seen how fragile those things can be, regardless of what they say about you.
All right, you talked about you want to play your best football at the end of the year. You didn't pitch a shutout, but almost a shutout against Temple last week. Your defense, what's the next step? When you're in your guys' ears about what they need to do to take that next step to continue to evolve and get to their best for that stretch run, what is it?
It's consistency. And I think and that's not just consistency on Saturday. That's not just consistency on third down. That's consistency in all that they're doing. And, you know, it's so critical how you prepare each and every week. And it becomes even more critical as you get later into the season, because people have got a lot more stuff to break down. They probably know your tendency is far greater, so they're going to attack your weaknesses each and every week. And when you put more things on film, there's more things for them to evaluate. So the challenge is to be consistent in what you're doing, but continue to grow, because, you know, we're going to play some really good football teams with some really good coaches, and they're going to figure out what the weaknesses might be, and they're going to attack it. And if we don't do a great job at knowing what our weaknesses are and finding ways to improve them, then, you know what, we're going to be exploited at some point in time. And, you know, so that's the challenge to being consistent in what you're doing, but still finding ways to grow.
You talk about good coaches, good programs, good culture. UCF has just that. They come into Nippert this weekend, and it's a team that has had some dramatic wins and some tough losses. What's the biggest challenge you're taking on the Knights?
Not really knowing. You know, I think that what you've seen, obviously Coach Malzahn has done a great job everywhere he's been. And I think in the first few weeks, you saw a great combination of what they had done there in the past with Dylan Gabriel and maybe him adding a lot of his offensive stuff. And I think, you know, after the quarterback got hurt, I think they, you know, started to maybe, you know, go a little bit more towards what Coach Malzahn maybe does or has done more. So you're kind of curious as to where is this offense growing, and you know the team is growing because, you know, like I said, everywhere he's been, he's had great success. They're much better, I think, on defense and sounder and what they're doing. So it's one of those ones where you're just not quite sure. Even though it's week six, they've had some changes that you kind of say, okay, now where exactly are they going? And that just that makes it more difficult to prepare for at times.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like you look, you know that when you take over, a team, even when you have your team coming in, you don't. Sometimes you don't know what you're gonna really get till the lights are on, the popcorn's popping. But especially when you take over, you know, somebody, it's like taking over somebody's sound system, where you're like, I just need a new remote. I got to figure this thing out. That's right. Whereas when it's
and sometimes too, like when you're doing a good job, like when you know our offense is doing a good job, they got a quarterback, so. Do teams like that are, you know, new in what they're doing, do they, you know, you get some different things. You change up maybe a little bit. So I think as a coach, that leaves you with some anxieties of saying, okay, are we going to get something really different? Do they think they need to do something different, or do they come in here and be who they are? And I guess that's the problem of being a coach is sometimes you know too much and you have to start thinking about too many different things. But ultimately – you got to play the game when the ball's kicked off. You won't know anything until that time.
How do you handle the questions about your former boss and USC? How do you handle that? I'm not in your press conferences on a weekly basis. How do you handle those?
I say it's the same thing that we had happen over the summer. We had some really good players after last season. It had some opportunities to go early to the pros, and it was a great opportunity for them. We accepted that. We know that with our successes, a lot of us are going to have other opportunities. So we'd look at it the same way. We said at the beginning of the year, guys, we want people to be looking at our juniors to try to get them to come out. We want guys to be looking at our offensive coordinator and our defensive coordinator because you guys are doing the great things on the football field. We all are getting, you know, opportunities because of it. So It's the better thing than having nobody want anybody because of what, you know, the performance that you guys are doing on the field. So we really look at it, if they talk about me or if they talk about any of our coordinators, it's all because of what the kids are doing on the football field. So, you know, we take it for what it's worth and our kids understand it and you know, we continue to move on.
I know Cincinnati is an incredible football state, but being an Ohio State guy, if I were to tell you that Saturday, you're going to walk on the field on national TV, third-ranked team in the country, on campus at Nippert, right? What has been built at UC? Because if we go back to when you were coming out of high school, like, that was a commuter school, right? And they kind of built their, they built everything on basketball, and they started building dorms, and people said, well, you can't, Nippert's too small, you can't do it. Considering where it was when you were a kid, to where it's going to be Saturday when you're on that sideline. For people who don't understand what's happened, I mean, you're going to the Big 12 and nobody's blinked. Nobody said, like, well, they don't belong. Like, none of that. It's really an amazing evolution of a program. What's that like as a guy who remembers it from what it was and gets to experience it for what you guys have built?
Well, I guess the good thing is I could say I'm ignorant. I didn't know. And I didn't know because, you know, I was blinded by where I lived and for what maybe Ohio State was. And you know, sometimes I think that's the arrogance of not recognizing and realizing. And, you know, as I walk in, I don't know exactly where it was before. I knew when Coach D'Antonio was here, I stopped down because I knew him well. And now as I study the history, I start to recognize that, wow, it has incredibly changed. I'm not saying because of me, it started back, you know, whether you want to say D'Antonio and Brian Kelly and those guys who had really kind of shifted. And it's always been in the history of basketball is unbelievable here, all the way back from Oscar in the 60s and the national championships. But I think what those guys really started was the idea that, hey, this can be a football school as well. And they really started something. And I think we've continued to push it and enhance it. And, you know, it's the great thing about what, you know, media is today and things that, you know, as you change and evolve, it's so much easier to see throughout the country. And we're fortunate enough to be able to, you know, experience that and now put, you know, our program, our athletic department in a position where, heck, we're on the national stage, and we've got an opportunity in a couple of years to move into a, you know, even a better stage.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. Last thing, Coach, and I know your time is very valuable. Teams are, in fact, I know it's a cliche, reflection of their head coach. The greatest pride you have in your team and how they play is what?
When they play consistent, but it's just the toughness. It's been, I believe this is a tough and nasty sport, and I don't.
But how do you? What's your process in teaching that? Like every coach says, physicality and toughness, right? Like how do you teach a team to be tougher than another football team?
I think it's consistency. I don't think that some people say, well, you're just born with toughness. I disagree. Just like some people say, well, there's people are born a leader. No, I think there's natural born leadership qualities. I think there's everybody walks into this program and we say on a toughness scale, you're somewhere in the scale. Our job is to make you tougher. Our job is to create an environment, an atmosphere, whether it's on the football field, in the weight room, and all that we do that is just breeds you to understand that the only way to get to where we want to go is to be able to outwork a lot of people. And, you know, I'm not saying I do. It's a part of the whole program. It starts in the weight room. It starts with how we do everything. And, you know, I really believe it's a mindset, and it's something that's trained. And obviously winning has a lot to do with it because, you know, whether you're 18 or 22 years old or not, or you're, you know, 48, we all see a little bit better than we hear. And when you can see those kinds of things happen and see what it actually looks like, you can buy in and believe it even greater. And I just think that we've had good fortune with winning, and that success has breeded, you know, what it is that we've wanted to be.
14-1 of your last 15. You haven't lost a conference game in 2 years. And, of course, Central Florida comes in on ABC this weekend. Coach, it's been an incredible season. There's so much other stuff swirling. We appreciate any time you could give to us. Thanks so much, and good luck this weekend against Central Florida.
Always thankful, Doug. I appreciate you having me.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we get you caught up on something said earlier today on Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports Radio. We call it...
And now...
What does the Fox say?
Here's Nick Wright on the Nets and Kyrie Irving.
Have no choice but to trade him. Because his contract's up after this year. They're not playing him this year. This is their only chance to get something for him. And I mentioned a bunch of trades yesterday. I'm going to zero in on one specifically. I really think Kyrie for Kristaps works. But if the Mavs say, man, if we trade for him, he might retire. Wouldn't the Mavs be okay with that? Would essentially be amnestying Kristaps. It would be getting Kristaps off the books and having no repercussions for it. So it's like either we get a guy who would fit perfectly next to Luka, or we get off Kristaps' deal and pay no penalty. Like, that's the move that makes sense for the Nets. Because right now, his trade value is as low as it could possibly be. I really think that's the move that has to be made, or something similar. I think they have to trade him, or else he walks away for nothing.
Yeah, I don't think you trade him. I think you sit tight. Your man's kind of steadfast and loyal, and it's the only way. Because, I don't believe that Kyrie's going to play if he gets traded. I do believe that that's a reasonable bluff. Do we have time to get this Dan Patrick cut in? I don't think so. I guess not. Okay. I don't think you can trade him. He's the worst kind of asset, right? He's the least that's over his miles. And you're like, oh, listen, you could get this great car. Like, yeah, but I can't actually drive it because it's already over its miles. And so then I'm going to have to pay money when I turn it in. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. We'll find out more. Odell Beckham Jr., through his first 4 years in the league, was the most productive wide receiver in that time span in the history of the league. Now he's back from injury and not really very productive. Why? Odell Beckham Jr. addressed it. We'll tell you what he said. and what we think next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.